This is Ernst Zündel, president of Samizdat Publishers in Toronto, Canada. I'm about to introduce you to an extraordinary human being, a man of rare courage and almost poetic eloquence. He is a Jew by birth, but he has long ago shed the narrow confines of tribalism so prevalent amongst his fellow Jews today. He had heard on the radio in France of a French professor who doubted the truth and even denied the existence of the so-called Holocaust, and who claimed that the extermination of 6 million Jews by the Nazis in Germany and in German gas chambers and German concentration camps was a lie. It was in fact a hoax. He thought it would be easy to disprove the professor who doubted this charge. He himself had always been somewhat suspicious of the media, but nevertheless, for somebody to doubt the gas chambers, that was even too much for him. Therefore, he wrote to all the famous authors and so-called experts who had written extensively on the truth of the Gazans and who had actually supported what now was supposed to be a myth. He also wrote to the French professor Faurisson. He was the heretic from Lyon University in question, the man who had been talked about in French radio, TV, and in the French media. And he asked Professor Faurisson detailed questions about his charge that no 6 million Jews in effect died in Nazi concentration camps via gas chambers. He himself had believed that 2 million Jews died through all kinds of effects of the war, such as bombing, starvation, and so on, and 4 million most definitely died of gassing. That was Professor Domergue, who himself, like many other people in Europe and in the world, believed in this thing implicitly. Interesting, as it developed, he found that those who peddled the Holocaust hoax did not reply to him. Not only did they not reply to him, there was absolute silence from all quarters. However, Professor Faurisson, the man who had been vilified in the French media, and the others such as Butts, Bennett, App, and so on, they did reply to him, and not only did they reply to him in detail, they also answered each question exhaustively and with logical documentation. Now this matches exactly my own experience and the experience of many other researchers into the Holocaust. For instance, a student at the University of Toronto, a man known to me, and I'm very familiar with his case, a man who was for years married to a Jewish woman, had 2 children by this woman, a man who had been himself in concentration camp, this time a Canadian concentration camp during the war, who came back to Canada from Germany and made a life and worked in Canada at the University of Toronto for many, many years as a respected scientific worker, was interested in the Holocaust. He joined the Holocaust lecture. The first year he was expelled after 3 lectures because he wanted documentation. The second year he was properly enrolled and again was expelled and barred from attending the lectures on the Holocaust by the Jewish professor when he asked this very same professor to document his assertion of the deliberate genocide as a planned mass extermination of the Jewish minority in Germany-controlled Europe via this very sinister plan for the final solution, which is the catchword so often used in these courses. He also addressed similar letters, that is Professor Domergue, like the ones that you are about to hear in tape-recorded form, to the French lawyer defending the French political activist Fredriksen, a young man who has for many years made a name for himself in a quasi-national socialist French political movement. Professor Domergue also, after he had read and studied and evaluated Professor Faurisson's documents and letters to him, wrote and came to the aid of the very same professor who by that time was under very heavy attack by the French media, by French Jewish and Zionist organizations, by resistance fighters and so on. And he also wrote a very detailed letter to the president of the court in West Germany that was conducting another one of the infamous war crimes trials, this time against a former police official by the name of Lischka. This was being held in Cologne, Germany, and by the way, which nearly was broken up when 300 French communist Zionists and other ruffians invaded Cologne and it came to a battle royale between the German police and these terrorists. Professor Domergue was one of the few Jews of the world to come to the defense of this embattled Mr. Lischka. Professor Domergue is one of the first prominent European Jews, along with another one of my co-workers, J.G. Burke, and the famous Professor Chomsky, who is now working out of Paris, but who was working in the olden days, I think was a graduate of Harvard University, and who has come to the defense of both Boris Zaun and Domergue in France about this 6 million question. Naturally, in America, there is Benjamin Friedman, Alfred Lilienthal skirting the issue, Rabbi Berger, and many other people who actually are beginning to expose sections, specific areas of the Holocaust as being actually inventions or certainly exaggerations of wartime propaganda. These men come to the defense of the victims, not of Nazi persecution, but of the establishment and Jewish persecution of former or present National Socialists. And those who merely want the truth told about a historical personality, in this case Adolf Hitler and his era or his works in Germany and Europe from 1919 to 1945. In other words, what we are saying is, and what we are seeing, is that the persecuted of yesterday have become the persecutors of today. And may I say, having experienced this persecution myself at their hands, that they are not one single bit better than what they claim was being done to them. They are very good at persuading us and at persecuting us through all kinds of terror, bomb threats, murder threats, rape threats for our wives, and so on. Quite a bit of persuasion and persecution involved there. So I hope that Professor Domergue is just one of a beginning number of voices of reason and honesty coming from amongst the Jewish community, not only in Europe but around the world, to bring fairness and truth to a very controversial topic, because if not more prominent Jews soon speak out, the Jewish community as a whole will be accused once the Holocaust has been exposed as a huge myth and a gigantic fraud, of having deliberately lied to and blackmailed an entire planet. Lied to in order to obtain the goodwill and sympathy of an entire human race and species. And then parlayed and converted the outpouring of warmth towards the victimized Jews into billions of dollars in cold cash, in vast reparations payments by the several generations of Germans who had not even been born at the time that the alleged extermination of the Jews took place. Not only this, but if and when the world finds out that millions of Jews around the world have made personal fortunes totaling into the millions and millions of dollars by producing films, writing books, TV documentaries, and theater plays, and that more millions hold jobs and positions of power and influence often as a direct result of the lie of the Holocaust, like the infamous Elie Wiesel, who was chosen by President Carter to head the U.S. Holocaust Commission, and thus elevated the lie to a sacrosanct national holiday in the United States, then all the donations, the foreign aid and the military aid, once they are totaled up, which has been sent to Israel, for instance, by Gentile nations and by Jewish groups and individuals around the world, when this drain on the economy and the resultant effect in higher taxes, inflation, and in dangerous foreign policy involvement effects in even in war, possibly Middle East war, the loss of our oil resources and so on from this area. Once this will be realized, as it now is already in the highest echelons in many governments around the world, then there will be a tidal wave of indignation which will roll over Jews everywhere, drowning and destroying all in its path. Because many of the nations of the West are not going to be like the Germans, as civilized, bound by rules, by laws, by regulations. No, especially America, Canada, Australia, all the pioneering countries of the Western world, those who were settled by the gun rather than by the law book, they will shoot first and then ask questions. And all the horrible Holocaust films and movies that were made showing all these tortures, beatings, the kind of forced confessions, the teeth being drilled out, the mental cruelty being inflicted, the rapes and so on, and the robberies. All this, I'm afraid, will one day be inflicted by those who inflict it today on us. Domeric the Jew, Faurisson the Frenchman, Felder of the Swede, Butz the American, Dündel the Canadian, Bennett the Australian, we all struggle against the last massive and diabolical leftover of World War II, the lie of the Holocaust. If by exposing the Holocaust hoax, we help to rehabilitate the German people and help to put them in their proper historical context in Europe and in this particular history of this century, it is only a decent and proper thing to do. If we furthermore help to save the Jews of the world from a worldwide Holocaust of unheard of proportions and brutality, then it is an act of extreme kindness towards our detractors and an act of considerable courage. Because we do this for the Jews out of a sense of responsible leadership in spite of the persecutions we suffer at their hands and the harassment they are able to cause us by their influence in the media, business, government, and the judiciary. As a young German, and ending on a personal note, a man who has lived amongst many ethnic groups and races around the world, I am proud to call amongst my closest and most courageous co-workers a man of the caliber of Professor Domeric, a Jew, a former Freemason, a one-time resistance fighter, and still a French citizen. Vive la vérité, long live the truth. Here is Professor Domeric.
Dear Mr. Cinder, you asked me how I could have been led to investigation and meditation on the problem of the 6 million Jews who would have been exterminated in the Nazi regime, 2 million of which by war facts and 4 million in gas chambers. I will clearly answer you, and as truth and sincerity must be widespread, you can use my statements in any possible way on condition that not one single word or comma should be changed in my sayings. About 3 years ago, when I heard that a university professor denied the historical long-claimed truth of the 6 million in gas chambers theory, I was stunned. I knew the realities of all the historical and philosophical lies of my congeners, spanning thousands of years, up to the suicide of Rockefeller finance, Marxo-Freudianism, without forgetting the teratogenous pill invented by Gerasi, and the neutron bomb of Samuel Cohen. But this assertion was so deeply rooted everywhere. So I was totally convinced, in spite of the fact that I knew that all the media which have revealed this crime between inverted commas indeed, are entirely in the grip of my congeners, No, it was impossible to doubt it, as it was, so to say, really taken for granted. Now the fact, real or not, of the extermination of 6 million Jews had absolutely no importance for me. And even if it were proven true, why? Because I do know that 50 people of Jewish descent have slaughtered over 100 million non-Jews in the USSR. That incredible slaughter started in concentration camps 15 years before Hitler was in power. In fact, Frankel and Jagoda alone, whose photographs you may find in the second book of Solzhenitsyn Gulag, are responsible for the death of millions non-Jews. And there are dozens of other butchers, among whom Yezhov, Firin, Abramovich, Uritsky, Sorenson, Davidovich, Berman, Rapoport, Apeta, etc., etc. For those, a super Nuremberg trial is long overdue. I do not mention, of course, the 50 million people who were killed during the Bolshevik Revolution, entirely handled by people of Jewish origin. You can understand that the 6 million and gas chamber theory, even true, is a mere tiny trifle compared to these actual Holocausts denounced by the communists themselves. Those are the two first points. The third point is that when I heard that a university professor claimed that the 6 million and gas chamber theory was the greatest historical lie in the history of the world, an elementary thought came into my mind. How was it possible that a university professor could claim such a dangerous truth? He had a comfortable social situation. He knew that my congeners rule absolutely everything, finance, politicians, justice, science, Marxism, Freudianism. Such a declaration was a real suicide for him. My conclusion was obvious. Either he was insane or gifted with a moral sense bordering on heroism. In fact, I should say, real heroism. The problem was easy to solve for me. First, I wrote to him and pushed him cruelly into the most uncomfortable things. For 2 years, he answered any questions. His answers were all written in his own handwriting, which is that of a well-balanced man, a profound and conscientious analyst. He did convince me that it was impossible to cremate in 2 years a population equivalent to that of Switzerland in 7 concentration camps. The study of the gassing technique with cyanide acid for one person, as it is the case in the USA for people sentenced to death, make it grotesque to assert that gas chambers with this acid could work for 1,000 people together. It is technically impossible. But I wanted to go further. Professor Faurisson could not express himself neither in newspapers nor in books widely published. The silence and the bad faith about him was conspicuous and even, so to say, comical because farcical. The mass media gave the name of all the exterminationists, historians of the Holocaust, who were supposed to crumble up Professor Faurisson. Their names are Polyakov, Delpech, Pitzblock, Wellers, Rapoport, Vidal-Naquet, Badinter, Karsfeld. Here are the questions which I asked. in the personal letters addressed to each of them in particular. First question, how can one destroy 4 million Jews if we suppose that the 2 other million, which are mentioned, died in war facts between 1942 and 1944, when the individual and global duration of cremation, the number of crematories being well known, leads to preposterous arithmetic results? How is it possible to gas thousands of persons together in a gas chamber working with cyclone B, that is, cyanide acid, when the study of the gas chamber in the USA for one person only, precisely with cyanide acid, is of an unheard of complexity? Why do chemists assert that the technical elaboration of such gas chambers with cyanide acid for thousands of persons together is practically unthinkable? Third question, how is it that thousands of tons of cyclone B have been found in camps when it is official that there was never any gassing there? Fourth question, what is the value of the evidence given by people who knew nothing of the gassing technique problem, as long as the core of the technical and arithmetical realities is not solved? When we know, for example, 200 witnesses of gassing in Dachau where none ever took place. Fifth question, why does the American Jewish Yearbook, volume 43, page 666, asserts that in Europe occupied by the Germans in 1941, there were 2,300,000 Jews? This corresponds to what my colleagues specialists say, since they think that the number of Jews in 1942 was about 3 million. They do add that there must be slightly less than 6 million today, in spite of the fact that they have increased threefold in France, for instance, since the war, twofold in many European countries. Sixth question, why not comply with Professor Forison's request when he, and not my congeners, demands control commissions more severe than those of Katyn to invalidate his assertions on this arithmetical technique nonsense? In spite of the fact that nobody wants to believe it, I can swear that I never received an answer to those questions from all the great specialists, between inverted commas, mentioned in the press. If anybody doubts it, it is very easy to write them through the channel of their editors and ask them, is it true that you never answered the questions put by Professor Domergue Polaco de Menas in his letter about the 6 million and gas chambers theory? I must repeat that Professor Forisson was never given the possibility to publish a book through the channel of a big editor such as Gallimard, Julliard, Lafont, etc. One book has just been published, signed by a few honest professors of Jewish origin, the title of which is Intolerable Intolerance, Edition Ederne Allier. I never saw the book mentioned in the newspapers entirely in the hands of those racist liars who, I must underline, are not Jews, since Rockefeller, Marx, Freud, Oppenheimer, Gerasi, and their like are heretics in front of the Torah. Freud and Marx are not Jews, claimed Professor Baruch, the well-known Jewish psychiatrist. To conclude this piece of evidence, I must stress the fact that even if the 6 million gas chamber were true, they are nothing compared with the over 100,000 million goys, non-Jews, exterminated in the USSR by 50 so-called Jews. It is not useless to say that Hitler wanted to avoid the world tyranny of Wall Street and the city, which, making the world a slave to the psychosis of profit-earning capacity, pushed man and the planet towards a general pollution of bodies and minds and to a general suicide. The Weimar Republic has today the area of the whole planet. And let us remember what Dr. Alexei Carrel said in his book, Man the Unknown. Nazism is the natural reaction of a people which do not want to die. Those are, sir, the realities above that of the 6 million gas chambers theory, which only perverse people of half wits can deny. I do remain at your entire disposal for truth, which I value more than life. There must be a few Jews of quality to redeem the others. Barrister of Mr. Fredrickson. At a time when comatose hypnotic slumber is general and a dishonored elite allows itself to be manipulated and to rot under the fallacious pretext that this is the course of history, in the face of global suicide, orchestrated and carefully arranged, there remains little for any man worthy of the name other than the ideals of truth, justice, and courage. Since we all have to die, we may as well die upright and noble as to do so in objection from inertia and institutionalized lies, which moreover implies that we are regarded by the manipulators as a mere mass of cretins, which is not true, of course. The conviction of your client, Mr. Fredrickson, was announced on the television, and the three factors in his statements that were presumed to have motivated his sentence were cited. In my capacity as a member of an illustrious family of Jewish descent, a professor in higher education, a non-active Freemason, and a voluntary militant in 1944 against Nazism, from a total lack of information that the past 35 years have cruelly revealed to me, I herewith wish to bear principal and decisive witness, which I authorize you to use in defense of your client in his appeal case. This testimony, seen in the light of my background, can have only a positive result. Either real justice will be rendered in service of the truth, or we shall know that we might as well be in Moscow or Peking. In the latter event, there remains little else for us to do but disappear into the gulags and the computers in a general sinking into sloth. The fundamental factors reported by the TV to have motivated Mr. Fredrickson's conviction are the following. Mr. Fredrickson averred that fascist Italy was more socialist than our present society. The 6 million gas chambers theory was a unique historic lie. The fact he declares the 6 million gas chambers theory is a lie is considered as inciting religious and racial hatred. Laws of Marchandot and Plevin. It is these three points that I am therefore going to deal with. In the widespread decadence, denial of biological laws, pollution, pornography, Bolshevism, drugs, induced by the megalomaniac racist sect of one-worlders who usurp the title of Jews and whose speculations and theories are all heretical in relation to the Abrahamic tradition, it is of the utmost importance to examine these 3 points and to affirm first and foremost that Mr. Frederiksen has spoken nothing but the sober truth. It stands to reason that fascism was socialist in the best sense of the term. Some years ago, I read a book written by a Freemason who described the social harmony in Italy under Mussolini. I was all the more astonished by the book since I know on absolute authority that all Masonic observances are without exception hypnotically aimed by my fellow Jews a total and unconditional condemnation of fascism. Nor have I ever heard a good word said about fascism or Nazism by a brother in a lodge. In fact, everything concerning these states was evil and preferably never to be mentioned. But one can go further than the socialism of fascist Italy and speak with precision on the system in Nazi Germany. Hitler was hoisted to power by the majority of Germans and remained in direct contact with his people, as is evident from the cinematographic films that have come down to us. When one looks at documentaries or newsreels taken at that time, one is struck by the handsomeness of the youth, both men and women, who had fine features radiating with inner life. What a horrible contrast between them and the characters in Lady Blue Jeans, whose whole biotypology busts with pathology at a glance, whether they happen to be sitting on university benches in the metro or howling, listening to singing humanoids. There was a parliament elected according to the national plan and plebiscites who rallied millions of citizens to its cause. The dignity of 6 million unemployed Germans was restored in free and happy labor conditions. It is an indisputable fact that the European worker did not know a more inviolable lot before 1940 than that of the worker of the Third Reich, supplied with smart lodgings, where everywhere a remarkable library testified to the elevated degree of culture of this regenerated people. It was obligatory for factories to be equipped with ultra-modern installations, assuring hygiene and security. And this at a time when millions of French and Belgian workers, whose lungs rotted in leprous industrial hangars, housed their families in sorry-looking lodgings, if not in slums or hovels. The factories of the Third Reich had their gardens and swimming pools for the recreation of the personnel who were freed from the tyranny of trade union politicians. They benefited more fully than those everywhere else from social security and paid vacations. The German family once again became the cell of the basis of society, and the woman had the right to devote herself to her home and children, thus protecting them from the flood wave of delinquency and criminality presently sweeping over the world. The mother of a large family regarded this as an honor and not a burden. In this atmosphere of freedom and joy engendered by real homes, the birth rate attained 1,800,000 as compared with 600,000 in France. Hitler himself invented and designed the first people's motor car in Europe, the ladybird-like Volkswagen that we still see today, 35 years later, in large numbers in every country in the world. The worker felt respected by state and society. The 6 million German communists had all become supporters of Hitler. In a word, the social reforms of Hitler in 6 short years were absolutely astonishing. Who can honestly and seriously say that present-day Italy is socialist? Can one conceive of a genuine social state in which daily assassinations are common, in which Parliament cannot debate except behind bomb-proof doors, and in which one cannot leave one's motor car in a street without it being either stolen or dismantled and ransacked? Call that socialism? Has justice been reduced to a degree of inertia that prohibits the recognition of those elementary facts, facts
which rendered a condemnation of Mr. Frederiksen on the grounds of his statement absolutely grotesque. Yes, just gave the departments of police and justice to Mr. Levy, and he will no longer be ridiculous. That's what happens nowadays in practically all the countries of the world. The 6 million gas chambers allegation is a historic lie, Mr. Frederiksen has declared. In reality, it is not only the most colossal historic lie ever known in human history, but in addition it is complete nonsense in so far as that it would have been technically and arithmetically impossible and utterly contemptible for lies bring dishonor to a whole nation, and this is sickening. It must also be remembered that there were not 3 million Jews in the Europe of 1942. Only half of these countries were subjected to German influence. There are approximately 6 million Jews today in the whole of Europe, and they have doubled their numbers in many countries. Furthermore, it would have been impossible to cremate millions of persons from 1942 to 1944 in 7 concentration camps, of which we have all the documents pertaining to the crematory urban, that were used to avoid typhus epidemics. As there were no gas chambers in existence that could have been used for the execution of thousands of persons simultaneously with Cyclone B, that is to say, hydrocyanic acid. It is well known from a study of the technique used in the American gas chamber for the execution of an individual person that it is an extremely complicated procedure, which makes nonsense of the claim that thousands of persons were gassed together with Cyclone B. All the chemists in the entire world may be questioned in the vain hope of finding the least trace of such gas chambers or even their designs on paper. Besides, Mr. Welles, the famous exterminationist, says himself in his book, yes, the gas chambers have existed. He says that the crematories, which could really properly work, were only set up in 1943, that is to say 1 year before the end of the war. Let us think over such a declaration. The books of Professor Racinier and the latest book by Professor Forisson, Political Truth and Historical Truth, published by Rieko. And on the spot visits to the camps, preceded by all the necessary information on gassing techniques, we serve to confirm or invalidate Mr. Frederiksen's assertion, not to mention the interrogation of witnesses who were alleged to have been present at gassings and who were always completely ignorant of the technique employed, thereby proving that they never had seen any gassings. Finally, if anyone is still unconvinced, the least that can be done before convicting him would be to appoint an international commission of inquiry more thorough than that of Katyn. Then, and then only, could Mr. Frederiksen be convicted on ground of his statements. And even then, I wonder how anyone could be punished for being sincerely mistaken. The information I am herewith submitting is an ipso facto guarantee of his sincerity. Incitement to religious and racial hatred. Here we are completely beyond the bounds of reality. If Mr. Frederiksen uses the term Jew to express himself, it is solely for practical purposes of comprehension in his debate with the law. He has stated quite unambiguously to me that the question in hand revolves around the speculative atheist sect itself, megalomaniacally racist. As a matter of fact, it is not a question of race for the important reason that races do not exist. Nor is it a question of ethnicity, as this presupposes a long-standing appurtenance to a given environment. The Eskimo is a kind of hypothyroidism, like the pygmy, and the Negro is a pituitarism with a chromegalic features. This is not at all the case with these people who are disseminated throughout the world and who have in common only a parapathologic mentality which at the present time manifests itself in a perverse and suicidal support for a one-world system from which all morality and sense of synthesis have disappeared to our great misfortune. Nor is it a question of religion, since all the speculation of this sect, symbolically Rothschild, Marx, Freud, Einstein, Picasso, are heretical in relation to the Torah and the Abrahamic tradition in general. The laws of Pliven and Marchando are therefore radically inapplicable to the case of Mr. Frederiksen. Let us remember that Zionism itself has been condemned by the UNO as a racism in 1975. Moreover, Professor Baruch has formally declared that Freud and Marx are not Jews. And he is perfectly right. These Then are the fundamental facts that I have had to state on the subject of this inconceivably unjust conviction of Mr. Frederiksen. It may serve some purpose to recall that Mr. Pierre Bloch himself has completely cleared the right wing of culpability in the Copernic case. For me, it is more than distressing to see a man convicted in this way for having stated the most elementary truth, particularly when he belongs to a group held up to ridicule and has no worldly means. We cannot see that in spite of himself. Mr. Frederiksen is being manipulated by the sect to which I have just referred, although I do not doubt his good faith and extreme courage. Indeed, he deserves the highest esteem, although his courage appears to me to be unwisely put to work. It is nonetheless true that the conviction of a man who is completely at the mercy of his opponents and who possesses nothing is perfectly repugnant, and for me, as a psychologist, quite in line with the psychology of this sect to which I am ashamed to be allied. In terminating, I might add that I find it quite atrocious that the opinions of Mr. Georges Marchais are given general consideration, and that he has the use of the television medium to express them while he's an accomplice in the regime which, under Stalinism, saw some 50 executioners belonging to this sect exterminate dozens of millions of non-Jews. Frankel and Jagoda alone were responsible for the deaths of millions of non-Jews. The only ideal left to any man worthy of the name today is not to die with his head in the morass of institutionalized lies and bestiality. That is why you may use my letter in your appeal case. It will at least act as a precise barometer. If Mr. Frederiksen is acquitted, it will mean that there still exists a small measure of liberty, and that Mr. Pierre Bloch, Rothschild and their pawns do not intimidate all the judges of the world. Forisson case. Forisson affair to the president of the court. Having been informed of the charges brought against Professor Forisson, I consider it my basic duty to testify in this lawsuit. The stupidity and comatose cowardice that prevail everywhere impel me to intervene, all the more so an account of my Jewish descent from an illustrious international family on my mother's side, my voluntary fight against Nazis in 1944, class 44, my membership of Freemasonry non-active, and my career as a professor in higher education, all of which factors make it imperative for me to intervene. Approximately 16 months ago, I asked the two parties, the revisionists and the exterminationists, to put their files at my disposal. From the Forisson party, I obtained everything I needed, without the least reservation. From the exterminationists, I have never personally obtained the elucidation I requested. All I received were the devious arguments of the official press, which never touched on the essential point, namely, whether or not it would have been possible to put to death 4 million persons in gas chambers with cyclone B, that is to say, hydrocyanic acid, during a period of about 2 years. In this regard, the photocopy of the third letter addressed to Professor Delpech is perfectly revealing. He was not the only one not to answer. The 10 famous revisionists, all of them professors or barristers, to whom I wrote, and to whom I ask the same essential questions, never answered one single line to me. This is very clear, isn't it? The court will therefore have to rule on the merits of a university project of 20 years duration, in my opinion quite exhaustive, on the following issue: were 6 million Jews deliberately gassed between about 1942 to 1944? I can foretell the verdict that will be pronounced in court, but I do know that I have applied myself to this question in complete objectivity, in a more thorough manner than any court up till now. I therefore take the liberty of making one or two observations relevant to the most elementary facts of arithmetic and common sense. The psychological reaction, the conspiracy of silence in regard to the core of the problem, the ill will displayed by my congeners in the entire world press, are by themselves factors that do not deceive a psychologist. If the exterminationists are so sure of their facts, a commission of inquiry far more exhaustive than those of Katyn, for which Professor Forisson has been pleading, would have been appointed long ago. It stands to reason that the innocent party would welcome such an investigation. Is it necessary to go any further to be convinced? I mean, the technical and arithmetical anomalies of the case. Is it necessary to go any further in order to see that there is something in the wind? My specialist colleagues tell me that there may possibly be 6 million Jews in Europe today. They have doubled their numbers, as has been the case in many countries like France, since the war. During the German occupation of Europe, deprived of half their countries, there couldn't have remained more than 3 million Jews in 1942. Moreover, I was in a position myself to witness their massive exodus during the year, during the years 1937 to 1939, for they arrived by their dozens in the private hotel of my grandmother de Ménage. Besides, and this is very important, the American Jewish Yearbook, in its number 43, page 666, mentions very clearly that in Europe, occupied by the Germans in 1941, there were 2,300,000 Jews. The cremation of 4 million persons between 1942 to 1944 in 7 concentration camps, of which we have the records,